through the course of my career, there have been key men at certain points, whether it was in local news or certainly when I was starting at CNN, just like begging to get a correspondent job, that came to, as Megan Rapinoe says, you know, threw down their ladders, showed me they wanted me to succeed. My success is your success. And I just really believe in that ethos. And that is so much of what Huddle is about.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Brooke Baldwin is the longtime CNN news anchor and the author of Huddle: How Women Unlock Their Collective Power. Brooke describes the huddle as a phenomenon when women get together in politics, Hollywood, activism, the arts, sports, and really everyday friendships to provide each other with support, empowerment, inspiration, and strength to ultimately create change. I witnessed the huddle trend Brooke describes firsthand through my wife this past year when she joined this amazing group called Quarantine, started by an incredible woman, Sarah Sachs. Quarantine offers fitness classes taught by Sarah to a large group of women. But being able to listen in from only a few feet away, I realized this group was much more than fitness. It was what Brooke would describe as a huddle. Women supporting women in so many positive ways. It's built around fitness, but really from the conversations I heard before and after class, it's really about being there for one another. Brooke found such inspiration in the huddle and what she was witnessing that she actually recently announced that she would be leaving her job at CNN. She was leaving to follow her passion in this incredibly powerful movement. I caught up with Brooke a few weeks ago and began by asking her how she felt about leaving her day job behind to pursue something entirely different. I wanted to start, with this breaking news that came out. You are in the breaking news business, as I recall, but is known that you will be leaving CNN, and you, as I look at, are one of their premier personalities and just someone who's really helped grow the network. How come you're stepping away?
It's a good question, especially because I don't have a job. It's a couple of things. And I know we'll get to the book in a second, but actually that is a huge reason. If you read my epilogue, there's a part in the beginning where I say, I have a feeling there are changes to come. And I would have written that at some point in 2020. And I think I just knew, let me say, this is a dream job. Like, I'm sitting in my CNN office and I pinch myself every single day. Like, I get to work with Wolf Blitzer. Okay. that said, and it's a privileged perch and I have this extraordinary platform. That said, I think my journey that has become this book Huddle the last 2 years, I have been able to dive into the deep end of storytelling. I have met famous women, or who I like to call extraordinary, ordinary women, who have done something for me that has not really happened in my day job, which is we would finish the interview and I would hit stop on the recorder and they would then turn the tables on me. Like, the line between interviewer and interviewee would blur. And they started asking me about who am I, about my huddle, about my voice, about what I want to do with my life. And I, being in the presence of these women, forced me to step into a space that is painful, in that I realized ultimately that I need to break away from this place that has been my dream, to, as I call it, do the backflip off the high dive, to dive more, to be braver, to be more courageous, to shine a light on women and also men. You know, I'm interested in just Americans and their stories, and to be able to, you know, talk to people for longer than 5 minutes at a time on live television. And I just also believe streaming is like the next generation of, like, what are we all doing in the pandemic? We're all sitting binge watching everything on Netflix, Apple, Hulu, whatever. And so I really would love to be able to create unscripted content to host and interview people, to live on a place like that, and knock on wood, knock on my laptop. You know, that's part of what I'm interested in doing.
Well, I am sure you will end up doing that, of course. And I want to talk about the book, but I want to ask you, you know, just in terms of stepping away, was there must Did you go back and forth and back, or was this like, I'm doing this?
No, I went back and forth. Yeah, I went back and forth. It's something that I have thought about for, you know, I would say pre-pandemic, definitely. Just, I'm in my 40s now, and it just made me, I want to just really step into, not to get all woo-woo on you, but just really be able to do a job where I can show up fully, fully as myself. That's something that's fully in alignment with who I am and what I'm interested in. And I have interviewed people through the years who I have remained friends with, who text me, you know, people who I've met through tragedy or through just the most insane things you can ever imagine, who I've befriended and I've had the honor of staying in touch with. But there's just, it's a lot of death and destruction in politics. And I have done it. It's been a privilege, but there's just, like I said, like there's just more I need to do.
Yeah. So tell us, how did the idea, exact idea for the book come about?
I mean, I wasn't like, I'm going to be a journalist and then become an author one day. I mean, it was a combination of really realizing that I believe, you know, outside of representation and power and access, like women really are one another's best resource. And I grew up as a total girls girl. You know, I was around what I call huddles, you know, whether it was cheerleading or throwing the shot put or swimming or playing soccer or dancing, whatever. You know, I often led these huddles with girls. And then what did I do? I turned around after I graduated UNC Chapel Hill in 2001 and I jumped into this profession where I was surrounded by a ton of dudes. I mean, I love dudes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I love some dudes. So, you know, the biggest stars in network TV are men. Most of my bosses are men. My executive producer for a decade was a man. And so that's just like what my job was all about. Cut to covering the presidential election that was 2016. And I found myself being assigned one day, literally bouncing on the back of this flatbed at President Trump's inauguration. And then the next day in the middle of all these women at the Women's March. And I peeled off my journalist hat for a hot second to think like, gosh, you know, all these women are showing up here for various reasons. Would I have a group of women who would be willing to jump in a car and split a tank of gas or jump in a plane with to demonstrate, to show up for one another in this way? And I didn't totally, but I realized my spidey sense was something special was happening with women in this country. And I also feel like huddles don't always make the headlines. And I wanted to change that.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that. You talk about timing and obviously the Me Too movement and everything coming together.
Me Too, time's up. Women, you know, in the midterm election, more and more women winning seats at all levels of office. It was like this whole whoosh of women.
Why in your mind, like just in terms of the timing of this and all of this coming at this time in history, right? Over the past, let's just look at it like 3-4 years. I don't even know if it goes back that long. Why is it happening now? Or why did it start happening now?
I think, to quote Fannie Lou Hamer, like women were sick and tired of being sick and tired. I think that, listen, let me check my privilege right here as a white woman born and raised in Atlanta. And I make that very clear when I write the prologue, but this has been an education for me in the sense that Black women have a rich history of huddling that predates slavery. It goes way back before, you know, one woman who told me that that was all we had. It was also just like, they just enjoyed one another's company and subscribed to the ethos of it takes a village. And I think so for Black women, they were like, we've been huddling all along. I think for white women, to show up at that women's march the way in which they did, and yes, it's been criticized, the performative activism, and some of it is you know, warranted. But I think with Donald Trump and what he said, all of the things that he said was part of the reason. You know, Tamika Mallory stood up there on the stage and was like, we're not here because of one guy. And I believe that. But I think for a lot of white women in America, they had not felt the way that this man who suddenly was thrust in the White House made them feel in a way that women of color in this country have been feeling for years. And I think that was part of the beginning of that wave.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I want to go back to you starting in news, right? And probably going through different
local TV.
Local TV, through networks.
Yep.
What was your relationship when you encountered other women? Did you try and befriend them? Were they your competition? How did that dynamic play out?
Listen, women can be the absolute worst to one another. I don't know how I thank my mom. I thank her. And I also am like, why did you teach me? You know, I really have always been kind. And I pride myself in that. Like my mom taught me well. So as a result, when I was in my first TV job in Charlottesville, Virginia, there were definitely some other gals in the newsroom with really sharp elbows. And I was like, guys, why don't we just spread the wealth? Like, let's share a beat. Why do we have to compete? Why do we have to do all this shit behind one another's backs? And I just didn't understand it. And I got burned by it a little bit. And make me have sharp elbows? No, but it certainly made me aware of the threat that other women could pose. Because at that time, 20 years ago, I mean, there were only a few seats at the table. Thank God, you know, it's improving. But through the course of my career, there have been key men at certain points, whether it was in local news or certainly when I was starting at CNN, just like begging to get a correspondent job that came to, as Megan Rapinoe says, you know, threw down their ladders, showed me they wanted me to succeed. My success is your success. And I just really believe in that ethos. And that is so much of what Huddle is about.
Yeah. And that's so great. And in terms of Huddle, can you explain just, obviously, we know what it means to huddle, but can you explain, like, what's in terms of huddling, what exactly do you mean by that other than just coming together as a group?
Sure. Well, I was really intentional about picking the word huddle because when you think of huddle, I think of a bunch of dudes on a football field, right?
Totally. Like
super masculinity all out there together. And I was like, you know what? What if we were as women to take that term, flip it on its head and feminize it? It's a noun, it's a verb, and it can be two women, it can be 2,000 women, but it's the notion of women linking arms, leaning on one another to get amazing shit done. Sometimes it can be women just standing together quietly in a church basement, or it could be at the Black Lives Matter march, or it can be up on Capitol Hill, a number of women coming together to band together to bring about change in terms of legislation for women in the military. And so it's not just friendship. It's also not just networking. Like, people ask me this a lot. How is huddling different from networking? And for me, I think of networking as either like my dad going out on the golf course with a bunch of his buddies and talking about like what's going on at work and, hey, can you hook me up with this guy? I really want to have this meeting, right? Okay. Or it can be, you know, our mothers and having and mentors, and we all need mentors, but it's more of a mindset. It's more of a practice. It's a small group of women. There was this Harvard Business study. Actually, I've got Harvard Business Review that published this study 2019 showing that women who achieve the executive positions with the highest levels of authority and pay also have an inner circle of close female contacts. So like basically, if you have a huddle at work, you'll make more money, you'll be more successful, you'll be happier. And so it's the idea of taking this huddle, a tight-knit group of women who you show up for, who you share in their success, you share their wealth, you show up vulnerable. That is a huddle. And yeah. I just noticed more and more women in my lifetime in these last few years have been huddling, and I wanted to raise it up.
Well, look, you did a ton of research for this book and met a lot of people, I am sure. Did you come across people you found who were some of the most memorable huddlers that you encountered?
Yeah. It's like, who's your favorite child? how about the first stop on my huddle tour was I flew to Houston, Texas. And so when we were covering the 2016 election and there was a lot of news happening in, 2018, the midterms, and a lot of women won, right? It was what they referred to as the pink wave, although I think that's totally pejorative, but a lot of women won these seats on all levels. And there was a race, like, do you pay attention to judicial races in your local district? I mean, it's just not really a sexy thing. But in Harris County, Texas, that year, 19 Black women all won judge positions in a very red district. They're Democrats. And so I remember a producer of mine at CNN like sent me this image of these women because this photo of them went viral before they had won. And I was like, oh, can I talk to them on my show? But you know, there's only so many minutes in a day. And I think a lot of viewers, you appreciate this hosting a podcast, but there are only so many people you can talk to, and sort of my cup runneth over. And I filed them in the back of my mind as they refer to themselves as Black Girl Magic. And I was like, I need to get to Houston. Cut to writing this book. And I'm like, bang, first stop on the huddle tour. I'm going to Houston. And basically I sat at brunch with six of these 19 and over shrimp and grits, which made my Southern heart so happy.
Yeah. You were happy to be back. I was down
so
in the South,
happy.
I'm sure.
So happy. Like shrimp and grits, biscuits. And I basically went to church and these women talked to me about obviously the rich history of huddling among Black women in this country, as I alluded to a bit ago, but also how it was never done. The fact that these 19 women decided they had all won their primaries and they show up in this room and they're like, wait a second, there's a Black woman, and we're all running for judge. What is happening? They didn't know. Goosebumps. They end up linking arms and essentially campaigning together. And initially the Democratic Party was like, no, you won't. No, you will not. And they defied what the party leaders were saying. And they ended up essentially going on the Black Girl Magic Tour of Houston's everything from local arenas, or they told me hair salons played a huge role, or, you know, of course, Black churches, and just got to the point where little girls were running up to them. You know, it's all about representation, right? But because huddling is so rich in their own history that it just came naturally to them. And so not only did they took this iconic photo, which I literally have in my office, I'm staring at right now. They gave it to me as a gift. Not only did they win, but they also now huddle from the bench. So they will actually text one another from the bench and approach, you know, the justice system differently as Black women, many of them as mothers. And they really hope to huddle and change the face of the justice system in Harris County, Texas. And I just love them and admire them so much.
Yeah. You know, talk to me, you know, and you mentioned it a couple of times, and I can imagine why, just in terms of Black women huddling to them, it sounds like second nature, right? And for white people, maybe other different ethnic groups, it might be more difficult. What is it about within the history and why huddling seems to be second nature to many Black women?
Well, as they explained to me, it was, they have this rich history of huddling in this country. And one of the Black judges reminded me during slavery, she says, we were all we had, right? But then Morgan Dixon, who has this program, which is this phenomenal program where African-American women just go out walking. And she said to me, she reminded me that huddling was their strength pre-slavery, but it's not just out of necessity, but a genuine love and respect for each other. And so post-slavery, like Black women have come together to do everything from child rearing to leading communities. So ultimately there was the back in the course of the Voting Rights Act in the 60s, I'm just looking at my notes because it's important to mention the Million Woman March, which was Philadelphia in 1997, 500,000 Black women, which rivaled the numbers that we saw in Washington, D.C. in January of 17 from the Women's March. And so it's just, you know, and we talk a lot about Black sororities and links and the legacy there. And it's just part of their DNA because of just centuries of existing in this country. With white women, I talked to this professor at Duke who said to me, actually, Brooke, she was schooling me on this the huddle drought for white women, which happened basically during the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, which was my lifetime, which made me feel like I wasn't totally crazy, that I was just noticing this phenomenon really coming back. And she was saying to me, actually, in the 1950s, so many white women would go and they'd go testify in front of Congress. You know, like June Cleaver and Betty Crocker weren't just, you know, making the pies in the kitchen. They were hopping the white picket fences and going to the League of Voter meetings. And then they ended up, you know, burning their bras and protesting into the 60s and 70s. But then a lot of them went to work and they leaned in and they became mothers and they just stopped huddling until this last decade. And I thought that was just super interesting.
More from our guests. But first, a word from our sponsors.
If there's one thing my new business has taught me, it's that digital media is exponentiating by the minute. In podcasting, our favorite medium to promote content, as many of you have seen with How Success Happens, is video clips. However, many of you may be wondering, how do I create all those great videos? Well, I'd like to introduce you to Vidyard, an easy-to-use yet powerful video solution that makes it simple to create videos, host them ad-free, share them with others, and track their performance. Vidyard's applications are truly limitless. You can upload or create videos and embed them into email campaigns, landing pages, and blog posts to generate and engage more sales-ready leads. You can use interactive video elements and video personalization to boost viewer engagement, accelerate the buyer journey, and convert viewers into pipeline. Vidyard is built for business with robust analytics, integrations with top enterprise tools, and customization options that answer businesses' unique needs. It measures how each video impacts revenue and how they perform across your website, email marketing, prospecting campaigns, and more, all from one central dashboard. Sign up for Vidyard free today by going to vidyard.com/HSH. And just like you guys, the team at Vidyard can't keep up with all these promo codes on podcasts, so they're making signing up really easy, super easy. So no promo code needed. Just go to vidyard.com/HSH to start using Vidyard completely free. And as a bonus, get their 2021 B2B Video Trends Guide.
And we're back.
What about from a generational standpoint? I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, and you know, there's Gen X, there's millennials, there's the boomers. Like,
yeah.
How is there a difference in terms of how they look at this phenomenon and huddling and getting together with people?
So full transparency, I haven't done research on this. So this is just for me, I don't know, observing as a journalist and anecdotal, but it seems to me that younger girls are like, yeah, we're going to lean on each other. Like, why is this news? Whereas older women, and maybe particularly white women, haven't done that as much. I look at my own mother, who I love dearly, but in who was one of five girls, one of five sisters, daughter of a Presbyterian minister in the South, but she really never had a huddle. And even with her own sisters, only until I've been talking so much about huddling, you know, that she's joined a book club in Atlanta through Agnes Scott. And she's really, really leaned on her sisters. And I feel like I'm a broken record saying the word intentional, but it really is something that it's a mindset. It's a, all right, I know these women. How can I connect them? How can I, in some cases, you got a huddle right under your nose and you just have to activate it. So she has.
Yeah.
And it's been awesome to watch.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm curious about huddling right now during your time. My wife joined this group during the pandemic. This woman put together this incredible group of women of really all different ages called Quarantine. And basically, Quarantine is they exercise workout each morning, but then I see they're always talking. They have nighttime sessions.
Love.
And it was like the first time I was like, when you were saying this, it was like she's prior to the pandemic, never had that.
Gave me goosebumps. That gives me goosebumps. She totally has a huddle. She has her Quarantine huddle. I'm totally cutting. I'm just jumping in because that just gets me so excited about your wife. But I think, listen, we're all so busy pre-pandemic. We've got kids and jobs and things and whatever. But this pandemic has forced us to like sit the fuck still. And as a result of that, it has also made us realize how we took connection for granted. And what I'm so excited about is now that so many women who maybe didn't even have a huddle pre-quarantine will emerge from this time having linked arms with women, whether it's working out, I definitely have, or friendship, or through work, or activism. And coming out of this, I am just very curious to see what change these women will bring. And it doesn't have to be huge. You know, you don't have to like change a law. It's just like little changes either in your community or your own life or your own family as a result of showing up fully as yourself, fully vulnerable with that tight group of girlfriends.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I've never seen her have that. And, you know, it's on Zoom and I'll be in the background or I'll hear. And like what I hear is just such huge positive reinforcement, like of each of them and people going through different things. Each of them, as I said, it's a wide range of ages and people. And
they're just talking about what? Everything from...
It could be my wife, you know, she was saying how she just became a real estate agent and she lost this opportunity for a deal. And she said after, you know, they were all talking about it, and then afterwards, one of the women who, you know, she just met through this, sent her this touching email on like what it meant, you know, like I've never seen that, but you hit on something that I think is so relevant and why I think it's perfect timing for this is I think this pandemic, especially I went through it, just I realized how important connection was. And I really was completely depressed for like months. I'm someone who loves to get out there, connect with people. As humans, right?
Yep.
And like, I think that people coming out of this, I, for one, have realized like how important it is, kind of looking for my own huddles, right? And I just, I had to give up one of mine as I play basketball every Saturday and Sunday. And like giving that up, not having that connection. Mm-hmm. And I realized just everything you're talking about right now, you know, obviously within the book, everyone who's just been through this has lived it and have realized just the importance of it, I would imagine.
I obviously totally agree with you. And I would add to that, that when I think of my own huddle, which by the way, I didn't even have my own huddle until the journey that was this book. I always had a bunch of really extraordinary singular girlfriends, but had not actually actively put them together. But I did pre-pandemic in the very beginning of writing this book. And I never have had an experience of where we talk about and group text about everything from like, are we too old to wear jean shorts, to racism, to, you know, activism and politics, to, we've had some serious recent discussions about mental health. There have been tears, there has been laughter in a way that I have never experienced. And it has changed my life. And I want to shout from the highest mountains and encourage women and men encouraging women to find their huddle, to lean on other women, because, you know, playing basketball and what comes in between playing basketball and what comes after playing basketball, like that's the special sauce of life. And that's what we need.
Yeah, there is no doubt that is the special sauce of life and really kind of what makes us feel good or human, or at least myself, speaking for myself. And you've talked to a lot of women too, who mm-hmm. have probably been in fields that are male dominated, including yourself. There's sports, mm-hmm. there's other fields.
Hollywood,
which Capitol we've Hill. Seen. Okay, mm-hmm. keep naming them, right? So basically, is there any difference in terms of the huddles and the way people, you've noticed the way women have huddled in the past in those areas, as opposed to ones where maybe there are more women that are working in those areas?
I think the women who are, if I may, huddle-tastic in those male-dominated fields are people like, I'll just give you a couple examples, like Ava DuVernay is an example of a Black woman filmmaker, director in Hollywood, who, when I interviewed her on the set of Queen Sugar down in New Orleans, it's a show that it's this awesome show. It's on the Oprah Winfrey Network. And she made a lot of news a while back because every single episode is directed by a woman, and many of them are women of color, which is just such a rarity in Hollywood. And, you know, I was like, Ava, and she was describing to me, I'll never forget this. She was describing to me of like, you know, being who she is and showing up at these Hollywood parties and how she's often the only woman and often the only woman of color. And I was like, well, why are you, I was playing devil's advocate and saying like, why are you sharing the love with all these other women directing the shows? Like, why don't you just own this? And this is your show and you're the director. And she goes, Brooke, I don't want to be at the party alone. And that just like, she wants to amplify other women. And in particular, in an industry where, you know, you look at a resume and if you haven't directed these categories of TV shows on these networks, like forget it. You're not even getting a look. And by reaching out to women in the, you know, independent film circuit, women who hadn't gotten that look and giving them this opportunity, she now is like sharing her success with these women. And now they're up and away directing network television. And what does that do? Net effect is having more women and more women of color behind the camera and telling these stories. Dom Krinn is a chef in San Francisco, the only 3-star Michelin chef woman in this whole country. And man, she's a badass and she's super tough and she's literally been burned and has all these crazy war stories of living in working in swashbuckling culture, you know, kitchens. And she too was talking about resumes for women and how she tries to look at people who aren't the obvious choice, but who just are extraordinary humans with like a real potential to learn and be excellent at fill in the blank role at a 3-star Michelin restaurant. And so the difference is these women are amplifiers. These women, like, you know, I go back to the Megan Rapinoe quote because it struck me so much when she won that award, like throw down your ladders. You know, these are women who want other women to succeed. These are not the women with the sharp elbows. These are the women who are like, fuck sharp elbows. I want to help other women succeed, because at the end of the day, if more women succeed, we all rise.
Which I love, because the name of this show for entrepreneurs, How Success Happens. And really what I've noticed are and especially what you've noticed in this research, is that it is those people and women in this case who actually really lift up others and get other people and bring them into the fold that are the most successful. And I can just think of a few in my head who I personally know who are in major positions at major companies. And knowing them personally, they're the exact types of people you talk about who are, you know, it's throwing down the ladder and it's bringing other people up. And yep. It's really interesting. And I know you said you did a little bit of research on this. Did you find that some of the most successful people were typical huddlers?
I mean, it's hard to answer that because I only really talk to successful people and they all were huddlers. So I don't know what the science is about that.
I got a few you could talk to, my friends, that we can, you know, get to the real answer. What do you think for this, for you moving forward? And the book is great, but to me, there's a much bigger opportunity here with, as you talked about, how TV in general is changing, viewer habits, streaming.
Yep.
There's a lot of opportunity around this book for a lot of other things, namely, not to even mention a podcast, but I'm talking like really big opportunities business-wise. Mm. Have you started to think about kind of what you want to do with the book?
I just want people to read it. I'm sort of still at step one. I am not taking for granted any of that. So I hope people read it. I hope it, okay, dream a vision. I hope it starts a movement in this country of women huddling, of that really like becoming a word in our lexicon. And beyond that, that is just icing on the damn cake. I have not thought about business ventures. I have obviously thought about, like, I'd love to just speak, you know, in the after times that will be after this pandemic. I'd love to be able to, you know, maybe stand on a stage or in front of some women and talk about this and have a real discourse around this notion of huddling and just inspiring women. I mean, man, I need inspiration. I need hope. And especially coming out of this difficult time in this country, I'm just hoping to provide that to women and to men. And beyond that, honest answer is, I have no idea, but I am all ears for ideas.
I got a lot of good ones. I'll send them over to you. But
cool.
I mean, I just think that there's so much here. And most importantly, I just think, like you said, what the most important thing is lifting each other up, making people. And as I said, I've seen it through my wife, through this pandemic, which is so incredible. And the inspiration that hopefully it's going to provide for so many people to really do this, because at the end of the day, it's about connection and having those communities. And I really do hope that it becomes part of the lexicon. And I think it will. Like I said, in some of the stories, I saw that before even I knew your book and it was coming out. And like I've said, I've seen so many cases over the past year or two.
Huddles are
huddling.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Huddles are everywhere.
I think you're at the perfect.
You think I'm onto something?
I definitely think you're onto something. You know, aside from bestseller, I think you're hitting communities right now that Brooke, she's pumping up and down now. She's doing the fist bump. But I will tell you, from what I really think, and especially I know with women, with guys as well, like there's something that's super important coming out of this that is really going to be something that I hope people will continue to. I know my wife will with her huddle, and it just shows how much it helps. So I'm so glad that you're coming out with this book and you're doing that. One, you know, I know you got to run, but do you think you're going to miss the news business?
Of course I will miss, you know what? I will miss those huge, huge stories when all of my friends, photojournalists, producers, anchors, correspondents all get thrown and flown into a city to cover who knows what the story is. And just to be part of, honestly, it's the people here. Like, this has been my family for 13 years. And to when that happens, I just know that feeling. I know when the boss comes in the office and is like, you got a bag packed, you ready to ride out a hurricane or whatever it is. And to be able to see my colleagues, because we're all over the country, is just the best. The people at this place are the best, and I will absolutely miss that.
Yeah, what an incredible experience, and best of luck with the book. Can't wait to able to purchase it. And do we know what's the on sale date?
April 6th.
April
you can
6th.
Pre-order now. We're trying to give extra love to the independent bookstores across the country because, man, they took a it took a whopping with the pandemic. So just shout out to independent bookstores. I mean, obviously you can get it at Amazon, Target, but if you've got an indie, or just go to my Instagram at Brooke_Baldwin, and you'll be able to figure out where you can get a copy.
Well, I know the perfect present to buy for my wife. So
I love it.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. This has been so fun.
Yeah, I'm glad I got to interview you, which is very unusual.
Turning the tables on me. Thank you.
All right, Brooke, thanks so much.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.